Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Elementary Romantic Calculus, a romantic comedy by Susanna Nix. Narrated by Caitlin Kelly. Chapter 1. Mia Ballantyne was lost, metaphorically and literally. She must have missed a turn somewhere. Surely she was not meant to be on this dusty farm road on the outskirts of some backwoods town in the middle of Texas. And yet, here she was, trying to find her way to an obscure regional university she'd never heard of before she'd applied for a visiting lecturer position in their mathematics department. This wasn't how things were supposed to go. She'd earned her PhD from one of the top math programs in the country, for God's sake. Gotten her bachelor's at Princeton, where she'd won the Andrew H. Brown Prize before graduating with high honors. She'd laid out a 20-year career plan for herself, and the next step was supposed to be a 3-year postdoc at a top-tier university. Not this! Unfortunately, the economy had its own ideas. The country was coming off the biggest recession of the 21st century, and higher education had taken a major hit. Budgets had been stretched to the breaking point as endowments shrank, grants evaporated, and enrollment dropped with the national unemployment rate. Postdocs were being cut, and hiring freezes were now the norm at most universities. Even low-paid adjunct contracts had become hard to get. It was the worst possible time to go on the job market with a brand new PhD. Most everyone in Mia's cohort was struggling, particularly those, like her, who'd done pure instead of applied mathematics. Some had put off defending their dissertations, some had taken temp jobs to make ends meet, and some had been forced to move back in with their parents when their fellowships ran out. Mia had been scouring mathjobs.org and the Chronicle of Higher Education, and everywhere else she could think of, applying for anything and everything she could find in academia. Up to now, she hadn't had a single serious expression of interest. When Bowman University had invited her to come to Texas for an interview, she'd jumped at the opportunity. At least it was a step up from an adjunct position, most of which were limited to part-time and only paid a few $1,000s per semester. The Bowman job was full-time and paid enough that Mia wouldn't have to take a second job just to cover rent. It was only a 1-year contract, but she couldn't imagine being stuck here in Podunksville for more than a year anyway. 12 months seemed like the absolute limit of what she'd be able to stand in a place like this. Mia peered out the dusty windshield of her rental car and shuddered at the cow pastures around her. Country living had never had any appeal for her. She was a city girl through and through, a New Yorker by birth who'd found Los Angeles enough of a culture shock when she'd moved there for grad school. Could she really survive in small-town Texas? 70 miles from the nearest airport, and who even knew how far away from a decent restaurant or grocery store? You probably couldn't even get food delivered here, except whatever passed for pizza in these parts. They might not even have reliable internet or FedEx deliveries. She'd read the stories in The Atlantic and The New Yorker about all the ways rural America was being left behind by tech advancements, consumer monopolies, and crumbling infrastructure. And now, she might be living it firsthand. She definitely missed a turn. This couldn't possibly be the road to the university. Could it? There was nothing out here but pasture land, farmhouses, trees, and... Are those goats? They were. There were freaking goats standing in the road up ahead. 3 of them, and even more milling around the overgrown ditch that ran alongside the blacktop road. Did people just let their goats roam freely out here? Could they be wild goats? Did they have wild goats in Texas? Were wild goats even a thing? Mia had no idea. The closest she'd ever gotten to a goat was at a petting zoo. She honked her horn as she neared the goats in the road. but they didn't seem interested in getting out of the way. They simply stared at her rental car as it rolled to a stop in front of them. Seriously? Mia put the car in park, unclipped her seatbelt, and shoved the door open. The humid heat hit her like a slap from a hot towel. Her weather app had predicted highs in the low 90s for Central Texas today, which had seemed ludicrously hot for May, but it felt more like 1,000 degrees out here. She took a few steps toward the nearest goat and waved her arms, trying to look menacing. Shoo! Go on! Get out of here! Instead of moving out of the road like a reasonable creature should, the goat stood its ground, regarding her with its unnerving sideways cat eyes. These goats weren't anything like the cute baby billy goats Mia had encountered at petting zoos. These goats were big and wide, almost half her height, with huge udders hanging between their back legs. She felt a moment of trepidation as she remembered a video she'd once seen of a man getting knocked over by a rambunctious goat. The video had been hilarious, but it was probably a lot less funny if you were the person being attacked by the goat. Maybe she should have stayed in the car. She was dressed for her job interview and didn't fancy being butted into the ditch by an angry goat. Imagine explaining that to the hiring committee. Sorry, I'm covered in dirt and vegetation, gentlemen, but you see, I was attacked by a wild goat on my way here. These goats didn't look particularly angry, fortunately, or inclined to rambunctiousness. Mostly they looked bored and hot. Mia could relate. I don't think you're supposed to be here, she said to the goats in the road. And I'm definitely not supposed to be here. The nearest goat tilted its head at her and bleated, though it was almost more of a honk than a bleat. It had a big nose for a goat. Not that Mia was any great expert on goat noses. But it seemed to have an unusually large, convex nose that gave it a distinctly comical appearance. It also had long, floppy ears that hung down past its chin like a lop-eared bunny. It was pretty cute, actually. Based on the bulging udder, she deduced it was female. It also didn't have any horns, which she hoped meant it wasn't the sort of goat who went around butting people into ditches. It started walking toward her, and Mia stiffened in fear. But all it did when it reached her was nudge her hand with its head, the same way her friend Brooke's cat did when it wanted to be petted. Mia gave the goat a tentative scratch between its floppy ears, and it closed its eyes in what was clearly an expression of ecstasy. When it noticed its friend getting attention, one of the other goats wandered over and bumped its head against Mia's leg. She gave it a head scratch, too. They seemed friendly and sweet, as long as you gave them what they wanted. They reminded her of dogs, and she'd always liked dogs, despite never owning one herself. A third goat wandered over, and Mia alternated pets between her three new friends. You like that, huh? Just call me the Goat Whisperer, I guess. This was certainly not how she'd expected today to go. She was supposed to be meeting with members of the Bowman University Math Department in 15 minutes, not standing on a dusty farm road sweating inside her interview clothes while she catered to a herd of affection-starved goats. How do you guys stand the heat out here? She asked her hoofed companions, as a trickle of sweat puddled inside her bra.
They're goats,
a man's voice said behind her.
They're used to it.
Mia started and spun around. A man in a cowboy hat stood in the road a few yards away from her. He seemed to have materialized out of thin air. There was no other car in sight, and no buildings within half a mile. She had no clue where he'd come from or how he'd managed to sneak up on her.
Sorry.
The man raised his palms in a placating gesture.
Didn't mean to scare you.
Mia had never encountered an actual cowboy before, but she assumed that was what he was, in addition to his cowboy hat, which was made of straw and fraying around the brim. He wore scuffed cowboy boots and dusty jeans. His arms were thick and deeply tanned, and his sweat-stained t-shirt pulled tight across broad shoulders. It was exactly the sort of hardy physique she imagined one developed from years of wrestling recalcitrant cows, lassoing horses, and hoeing crops. Or whatever it was that cowboys did. Honestly, she had no idea. The man nodded at her car.
You lost?
Is it that obvious? Squinting, she lifted a hand to shield her eyes from the sun and nearly started again when she got a good look at his face. She'd been so distracted by the whole cowboy thing, she hadn't appreciated how attractive he was. His strong, square jaw featured exactly the right amount of stubble to look manly and slightly rough, while his cleft chin added character to his face. But it was his eyes that struck Mia the most. Dark, deep-set, and piercing beneath the brim of his hat, they regarded her with a startling intensity. He scratched his stubbly jaw as those sharp eyes looked her up and down.
Well, you're not really dressed for a hike in the country. Let me guess, you're looking for Bowman.
That's right, she said. Am I close?
You're a couple miles off the mark. The GPS is wrong.
How can the GPS be wrong? Pushing his hat back, he wiped the sweat off his forehead.
It just is. Been that way for years. I guess they don't care about getting it right out here, or they'd have fixed it by now.
He pointed down the road behind her.
It's trying to direct you to the old Bowman farm, which is on the far east side of the campus. The main entrance to the college is two more exits up the highway you came in on.
She turned to look in the direction he'd pointed, then back toward the highway she'd come from, resting her hands on her hips. So you're telling me everyone just gets lost trying to find the university? The cowboy shrugged.
Most people going there already know where it is.
Right, she said. Of course they do. He started toward the goats, who were watching him with interest.
I'll just get these fugitives out of your way so you can turn around.
You mean they're not supposed to be wandering around loose? He let out a deep, throaty laugh.
Not so much. No. They're escape artists. Especially Alice. She's the mastermind. Always leading the others into trouble.
He made a kissing sound, and the goats clustered around him. They're cute. And so are you, Mia thought, but fortunately refrained from saying out loud.
Don't think they don't know it. They'll charm the pants off you and then start chewing on your shoes once your guard's down. Speaking of...
He nodded at Mia's feet, where one of her new goat friends was nibbling at the hem of her pants leg.
Ack! Stop that!
She jerked back, out of the goat's reach, and it gave her an indignant look.
Come on, Belle. Back where you belong.
The man made another kissy noise, and Belle trotted over to him, joining the others. Do they all have names? Mia asked, as she watched him lead the goats to a gap in the wire fence running alongside the road. She hadn't noticed it before, but it must have been where the goats had slipped out.
Yep.
He stooped to widen the hole in the fence and gestured the goats through.
That's Agatha.
He pointed to each of the goats as he named them.
Zora and Charlotte.
Agatha Christie, Zora Neale Hurston, and Charlotte Bronte are all novelists. Mia read mostly nonfiction these days, but as a child, she'd read a lot of classic literature because her father had told her it would make her smart. The man nodded as he shooed the last goat through the fence.
That's right.
Some people say Jane Eyre's erotic masochism makes it the 19th century Fifty Shades of Grey, but I think its complex depiction of female agency was profoundly feminist for its time. The cowboy lifted his head and squinted at her. Charlotte Bronte is my second favorite 19th century author.
Mia added, as if that could somehow explain why she'd said the words erotic masochism out loud to a total stranger.
Are you an English professor?
He asked, frowning slightly. No, my PhD is in mathematics. He accepted this information silently. At least he hadn't warily backed away from her.
Yet.
Mia shuffled her feet, eager to end the conversation before she blurted out anything else embarrassing. Thanks for, moving your goats. The man's lips twitched in what she suspected was amusement at her expense.
If you head back the way you came and get on the highway heading east, you'll see a sign telling you where to exit for the college.
Got it. Thank you very much. Mia got back in her car, turned around, and drove back to the highway as fast as she safely could. Chapter 2. Once she found the university, Mia's interview went well. So well, they called her a few weeks later and offered her the job. That left her with a difficult decision to make. On the one hand, it was the only decent job offer she'd received. On the other hand, she wasn't thrilled about the location, the school, or the job itself. On the other hand, she'd probably be so bored and lonely living in a small town that she'd have nothing else to do but spend her free time working on the proof she hoped to publish, which would go a long way to boosting her CV and helping her get a better job next year. When it came right down to it, she didn't have a choice. It didn't matter how conflicted she was, because she had no other options. None. Mia called her boyfriend and arranged to meet him for dinner at their favorite Mexican restaurant to break the bad news. Paul worked at a tech company as a software programmer. They'd met via a dating app last year and hit it off immediately. They challenged each other, had deep intellectual conversations, and were both focused on their careers and their mutual goals of financial independence. The two of them were ideally suited. Except for the small matter of her career requiring her to move away from LA. She'd always known it was a possibility, but they'd never talked about it much. Every time she'd raised the subject, Paul had said they'd figure it out when the time came. Well, the time was now. Once they'd gotten their drinks, Mia moved straight to the bad news. Bowman offered me the job. A 1-year contract teaching 3 courses a semester, starting in August. Paul sat across the table from her, picking through the bowl of tortilla chips. She watched his face carefully, but his ice-blue eyes betrayed no reaction as he selected a chip and used it to scoop up an implausible amount of salsa before shoving the whole thing in his mouth.
"Tell me again where this place is,"
he said when he'd finished chewing. She tucked her chin-length hair behind her ears. Crowder, Texas, about 70 miles outside Austin.
Wow, okay.
Was that a smidge of disappointment she detected in his voice? It was hard to tell. He reached for his michelada and licked some of the salt off the rim.
Are you going to take it?
She took a long, deliberate sip of her margarita before answering. I think I have to. She looked at him. Don't I? He shook his head, pushing his drink away.
I can't tell you what to do.
She'd always appreciated that he never tried to exert influence over her life. But right now, she'd give anything for someone to tell her what to do. The way things are going, I might not get another offer this good. I think I have to take it. Paul nodded and took a sip of his drink.
Then I guess we should probably break up,
he said without any trace of emotion. What? Mia jerked her head up. Just like that? You don't want to
move to Texas?
His scoffing tone cut deep.
That's not on the table. I thought you knew that.
She hadn't known that. How could she when they hadn't talked about it? Was this what he'd meant all along when he said they'd figure it out? That they'd just break up?
Admittedly, rural Texas was a big ask. Paul's answer might have been different if she'd been offered a job in the Bay Area or New York City. It would be nice to think so, anyway. Mia swallowed, trying to hide how much his reaction had hurt. You're always saying how great it is that you can work remote from anywhere.
Theoretically, yeah. But I've got a good job right now that's here. And they like to see my face in the office. This is where I need to be for networking and career advancement. There's nothing for me in wherever the fuck Texas.
Crowder. Mia wanted to point out that she was the something for him there. But he clearly didn't consider that enough of an incentive.
Whatever.
He mumbled, as if the name of the place she'd be living wasn't important enough for him to remember. Okay, but... She struggled to find a solution to the problem, a way through that didn't mean the end of their relationship. We don't necessarily have to break up. We could try to make it work. It would only be temporary. He regarded her with a pitying expression.
This job's temporary. But what comes after? He'll have to move somewhere else in a year, right, to take another job? What are the odds it'll be here in LA? Or even on the West Coast? You'll be back in the exact same situation, at the mercy of whatever job you can get.
He shook his head as he reached for another tortilla chip.
Even if you knew you were coming back here, a year is a long time.
If you accept Einsteinian relativity, the passage of time is an illusion, she said. Past, present, and future exist simultaneously with the three dimensions of space.
Paul rolled his eyes. Don't go all weird on me now. This isn't a theoretical problem. I'm talking about real life.
The laws of physics were real life, but Mia didn't argue the point.
You can't expect me to live like a monk for a year while you're half a continent away, Paul said.
It didn't seem like that much to ask. Unfortunately, he didn't seem to agree.
A lot can happen in a year. We could grow apart. We could both become completely different people. I could meet someone.
His mouth twisted into a mocking smile.
Hey, maybe you'll fall in love with a cowboy and decide you never want to leave.
Mia would have laughed at the suggestion if she hadn't felt like crying. Paul reached across the table and took her hand. She squeezed his fingers gratefully, comforted by his touch. But his next words offered only cold comfort.
I know this move isn't what you want, but you can't ask me to put my life on hold for you. We've had a good run. I think it's best if we call time of death now and move on.
Mia took the breakup hard. She couldn't believe they were done. Just like that. Everything had seemed to be perfect between them. Right up until the moment it was over. The part that hurt the most was how easily Paul had let her go. He hadn't even seemed upset. She'd seen him display more emotion over a Lakers game than he had over the end of their year-long relationship. If he'd been torn up about it, acted even the least bit regretful, it might have been easier for Mia to accept. Instead, she felt like he'd pulled the rug out from under her. Everything she'd believed to be true, that he loved her, that they were a team, that he'd be there to support her through good times and bad, had turned out to be false. Had she been deluding herself all this time, overestimating the depth of his commitment? Or had he actively misrepresented his feelings? She couldn't stop rewinding her memories of every moment they'd spent together, searching for signs she should have picked up on before now. A month after Paul had unceremoniously dumped her, Mia was still struggling to regain her footing. It didn't help that she was in the midst of uprooting her whole life, preparing for a move she didn't want to make in order to start a job she hadn't wanted to take. But at least it gave her something to focus on besides her broken heart. She'd thrown herself into lesson planning for the three courses she'd be teaching, all of which were part of the university's core curriculum offerings. Calculus 1, Foundations of Mathematics, and something called Math in Society, a math class tailored for humanities majors. Mia was expected to create her own lesson plans around the department's vague framework for the courses. In her previous teaching experience as a graduate student, she had been provided with a lesson plan by the professor she was assisting. This was the first time she'd ever had to come up with one of her own. To prepare for it, she'd been delving into educational resources online and brushing up on pedagogical techniques. She was deep into a paper on active learning approaches to post-secondary mathematics education when her phone rang on the table beside her. Seeing her sister's photo on the screen, she smiled. Holly was basically a younger, cuter version of Mia. The same medium brown hair and eyes that looked so plain on Mia were somehow much prettier on Holly, who was a full 4 inches shorter than Mia's 6 feet. She and Holly had always been close, despite their 3-year age difference. But Holly still lived with her mother in New York, and Mia missed her like crazy.
"Heya, how's it going?" Holly said cheerfully when she answered.
Mia leaned back and rubbed her tired eyes, forcing cheer into her voice.
"Fine. You're not still pining over what's-his-name?"
"No way," Mia lied.
"I'm so over it."
It was much easier to pretend she was taking it in stride than admit she was struggling. And maybe, if she kept up the act long enough, it wouldn't be an act anymore. She would be over it.
"Good," Holly said. "I never liked him anyway."
"You didn't?" This was news to Mia. Holly had only met Paul once, but they'd seemed to get on like gangbusters. Her sister had never voiced any criticism of him. "Why?"
"He never seemed to pay enough attention to you. You know all those little things guys do when they're head over heels in love? Like, I don't know, rubbing your back or checking if your drink needs a refill, or gazing lovingly at you from across the room when you're talking to someone else. He never did any of that."
"Not all men do those things." What Holly was describing sounded like a fantasy rather than real life. They were the sorts of things Mia had assumed men only did in books and movies.
"They do when they're infatuated," Holly said. "You deserve a boyfriend who hangs on your every word. And that wasn't Paul."
It definitely was not. Maybe Holly was right. Maybe those were exactly the sorts of signs Mia should have picked up. She squeezed her eyes shut, feeling like a fool. "You never said anything."
"Well, you know, you were so into him."
Holly sounded regretful.
"I didn't want to make waves."
"Promise me the next time you don't like my boyfriend, you tell me. You could have saved me a lot of grief and wasted time."
"I promise," Holly said. "As long as you promise not to hold it against me."
"Deal." Mia reached for her coffee cup, which had long since grown cold. "So did you call just to check up on me?" She swallowed the dregs with a grimace.
"Not exactly. I have a question, although I think I already know the answer."
Uh-oh. Mia recognized that tone, and it usually presaged something unpleasant.
"What is it?" she asked,
pushing her chair back to carry her empty mug into the kitchen.
"Have you told Dad about the job and your move yet?"
Mia hung her head with guilt as she set the mug in the sink.
Well, sis."
For a younger sister, Holly was surprisingly good at sounding stern and disappointed.
"I know. You have to tell him."
"I will." It wasn't entirely Mia's fault. She hadn't actually heard from her father in several months, which was par for their relationship. Sure, she could have called him herself to break the news, but it wasn't a conversation she was eager to have. So she hadn't. Mia knew exactly how her father, a quantitative analyst who'd put his doctorate in statistics to work on Wall Street, would feel about her new job. He'd made his disappointment in her academic and professional choices clear enough already. If she'd followed in his footsteps like he'd wanted, he could have helped her at every step of her career, smoothing the way for her to jump from the right schools into the right jobs with the right companies.
which might have been fine if she'd had any appetite for finance or the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?